Since dawn, over 24 more Palestinians have been killed across the besieged territory. In one of the latest attacks, an Israeli strike killed 6 more Palestinians in Gaza's southern city of Khan Yunis. Earlier, a child was killed in an attack in the same area. Several Palestinians were also killed in Beit Hanun in the north. The regime resumed its offensive against Gaza on March the 18th, shattering a 2-month ceasefire. The death toll from the regime's genocide since October of 2023 has risen above 50,660 people, with over 115,200 others injured. We're going to cross over to Deir al-Balah, joined by Abubakar Abed. Abubakar, it's been another deadly day. Please fill us in on the latest information that you have.
Yeah, Israel is just speeding up its genocide all across the beleaguered territory, starting from the southernmost part of the Strip of Rafah, where Israeli troops have advanced forward inside the city, and now they are making division areas near the western and the northern parts of the city, particularly around Mouraj Corridor. So now the full city is under the full control of the Israeli military. This is, of course, in addition to the relentless attacking, firing and shelling from Israeli vehicles and tanks all across Rafah. And in another southern city, in Khan Yunis, Israeli drones or warplanes have targeted a group of civilians, killing 6, at least 6, and wounding many others who were transferred to the medical complex of Nasser to receive treatment. Those, of course, who were injured and the fatalities were taken outside for funeral prayers. And, of course, the Israeli tanks have also been unceasingly shelling the eastern outskirts of Khan Yunis, Khza'a, Abasan, and Bani Saleh. And in one of the neighborhoods there, Israeli quadcopters are encircling many families who cannot really leave outside those parts and seek out some sort of safety outside the eastern parts and move into the center. The same here in central Gaza. Israeli tanks have also been shelling central Gaza in its northern parts, in its eastern outskirts, on its eastern outskirts, and of course in the northern regions of Al-Nusayrat camp, the artillery shelling. There hasn't been any second without hearing this sort of shelling. And in Beit Hanun, in northern Gaza, Israeli drones have also targeted a group of civilians. 6 were killed, in fact, and 1 was retrieved. The other 5 are unreachable as of now because the area is encircled, fully encircled by Israeli squadrons, and the paramedics and ambulances cannot go there at all because Israeli vehicles and drones will open fire on them. And in East Gaza City, after the recent evacuation orders in Al Shia'iya and Al Zaytun neighborhoods, still Israeli tanks and quadcopters are opening fire unrelentingly on people trying to move inside the city. And I've been talking to people from there. They are now taking shelter outside Al Shia'iya, moving to the west of Gaza City. And here in Deir al-Balah, we've seen some sort of displacement by people who live near the border regions after Israeli tanks have intensified their shelling across the eastern parts of Deir al-Balah and central Gaza. So all across the strip, there are more new waves of displacement. There is just another episode of horror. Since dawn, more than 29 people have been killed across Gaza. And one of the recent massacres, the Najjar massacre in Khan Yunis, around 14 people have been murdered. So this adds to thousands and many scores of Palestinians who have fallen victim to the ongoing genocide because of what Israel has wreaked havoc inside the territory.
Yes, and very sad indeed. Thank you so much, Abubakar Abed in Deir al-Balah, for that update. Meanwhile, dozens of families besieged in Gaza's city's Shojaya neighborhood have made urgent pleas for help in light of the relentless Israeli bombardments. The families, which include women, children, and the sick, are trapped in dire circumstances. They can't leave their tents and emergency shelters due to the frequent and sudden Israeli artillery and drone strikes. This escalation in attacks coincides with the announcement by the Israeli regime of a significant expansion and its ground offensive in Gaza, Israel seeks to seize more territory within the Palestinian Strip and incorporate them into so-called security zones. Breaking news, Hamas has released new footage that warning that time is running out for the Israeli captives in Gaza. Again, this is the new footage that's been released by Hamas, warning that time is running out for the Israeli captives in Gaza. Well, to get a better sense of the genocidal U.S.-Israeli war that's still raging on in Gaza, let's listen to some of the Gazans describe the horrors they're facing daily.
There is no safe area in Gaza. We went to Tel Al-Hawa in western Gaza, and from there, they told us to evacuate. There is no safe area. We want a safe place to stay, not to be displaced from one place to another every time. We've suffered enough. That's enough. It's been 2 years of constant displacement from one place to another. We've had enough. We want a solution. We left because of the bombing and shells, and we don't know where to go. We want a safe place to stay, not to go from the south to the north and from the north to the south.
I am displaced from the Z-Town area, heading to Khan Yunis to search for a safe place because our area is not safe. As you know, in Z-Town, there is 24-hour bombing, and shells are falling near us. I have a special situation. I have three children with disabilities. So I left because there are no basic necessities in the Z-Town area. There is no seawater. And even potable water reaches us with difficulty and is not suitable for drinking. Additionally, there is no proper food due to the closure of the crossings. Our message to the world is to look at us with compassion and mercy, to see the suffering of the poor, and to stand by us. This is not life while the whole world watches and remains silent. What are they waiting for? Are they waiting for most of the Palestinian people to be annihilated?
Moving on to other news now this hour, to mark the Palestinian Children's Day, people have taken to the streets in the occupied West Bank to express solidarity with the people in Gaza, particularly the children. Demonstrators denounced the ongoing slaughter of Gaza's children in cold blood and condemned the violent Israeli assault on rescue teams in Rafah.
The Israeli army committed a terrible war crime by attacking first aid providers and medics in the Red Crescent Society while they were in their ambulances, clearly marked with their sirens and their lights on. Nevertheless, they attacked them and killed them, one after the other. Maybe some of them were still wounded, but still, they buried them under the dirt along with their ambulances. But what the Israeli army did in Rafah, and that's what the New York Times has exposed, was a terrible war crime. And for that, Israel must be subjected to punishment, subjected to actual sanctions against this terrible massacre and this terrible violation of every international law that should protect those who provide medical care to the injured people.
We have come today to express our severe anger towards the international community, for it has failed the Palestinians. It has turned its back on the rights and means and the lives of Palestinians and has allowed Israel to do what it does and to continue this excessive attack against both Gaza and the West Bank. Also, the continuation of the targeting of Palestinian civilians who are sitting in their territory, hoping that there will be a cessation of hostilities and end to this madness. But instead of putting an end to the madness, the international community turned its back to the continuation of this madness, to the targeting of Palestinians, to the killing, the maiming of Palestinians, and above all, the persistent policy of displacing Palestinians from their territory. So we have come here today to express anger and also make our voice heard that this ought to be ended and soon.
Well, a video is circulating online showing Israeli forces firing upon a group of Palestinian paramedics in Gaza's southern city of Rafah. The footage was found on the phone of one of the paramedics who worked for Gaza's Civil Defense and Palestine Red Crescent Society. The video was filmed on March the 23rd. The medics were on a rescue mission in Rafah's Tel Sultan neighborhood when the attack happened. Their ambulances and fire trucks were clearly marked and had their emergency lights on as they came under fire. At least 15 paramedics were killed in the strike. Hamas has strongly condemned the attack, saying the video is proof of yet another war crime in the regime's genocidal campaign against Palestinians. The resistance group said the video captures the deliberate, cold-blooded slaughter of civil defense teams. Hamas said the video is irrefutable visual evidence which exposes Israel's lies, proves the systematic targeting of humanitarian workers, and constitutes premeditated murder under international law. Gaza Civil Defense has also called for an international probe into the execution-style killing of the medics and aid workers. We're going to cross over now to Glasgow, talk to Mick Napier, co-founder of Scottish Palestine Solidarity Campaign. Thanks so much for being with us, Mick. I mean, your thoughts, it seems like every day it just gets worse and worse. And we have seen from the very beginning, of course, aid workers being attacked, also hospitals being attacked. And now we have the video, the way that they targeted these aid workers. I mean, your thoughts, Mick, the whole world should be in such an outrage already, especially when seeing something like this. I mean, your thoughts.
It's worth pointing out that, of course, Israel always denies mass murder as long as they possibly can. And it seems that there's this kind of Groundhog Day with the British media, because every time there is a massacre, they don't start off from the history that Israel always denies their mass killings and blames Palestinians for it. They start off as if Israel was a reliable witness. But in this occasion, we see that they were caught by the fact that one of the victims was filming his own and his comrades' deaths. So they can't deny it. Now, however, we enter into the next stage, which is a very sick charade. I watched the British delegate to the United Nations yesterday saying what a terrible crime this was, which it is, and how there must be a thorough investigation. She didn't say by whom, but she clearly meant the Israeli military. Now, every single UN report and other report into Israeli war crimes over the last 20-odd years has found Israel to be guilty of terrible crimes executing civilians, including children, cold-bloodedly. But every report also includes the conclusion that the Israeli army always covers this up as much as it possibly can. And so the idea that Israel will investigate this is preposterous. Clearly, for the Israeli military, they're dealing with human animals, the Palestinian people, and anything goes. Mass destruction, mass killing, tying the captives' hands behind their backs and executing them. Lining up innocent civilians and executing them has a very long extended history in the history of Israel. From 48, from Deir Yassin, a name that many people know who don't know very much, the mass execution of peaceful villagers. 56 in Gaza, Ariel Sharon lined up people selected at random, boys and men, and killed them in front of their families deliberately to instill terror, and so on and so on. This is not something new, sadly. The scale of it is different. But this tactic of capturing people and executing them one after the other is not new. It's got a long history, massively researched, very well documented and authenticated by UN researchers and others. And yes, what we see is the latest example of this. It's thoroughly revolting. Israel's caught telling lies that the ambulance was suspicious. What on earth does that mean? The ambulance was moving with lights flashing as an ambulance should, and the inhabitants were killed. But why should anyone treat this as an isolated incident? The long history of Israel shooting and killing ambulance workers is very, very well documented. It's something that is actually quite easy to capture on film and in photographs. And the history of the West Bank, the history of Gaza over many decades is littered with crushed ambulances. And it's also something that's worth knowing, that really every journalist who's ever visited Palestine and many others know one thing, that when Israel finds a Palestinian dying, they stop ambulances from reaching them until the person has died. This is so well documented, it's known to every journalist and it's constantly reported. But my own government continues to give a green light to these things. And even when they express indignation, they continue to send weapons. They continue to send every kind of support they can.
Indeed.
It's appalling. And we lack the language of a poet to describe this new, fresh depth of degeneration that we're witnessing from the Israeli military.
All right. Thank you so much, Mick Napier, co-founder of Scottish-Palestine Solidarity Campaign out of Glasgow. Now to Yemen, where the United States has launched a new wave of airstrikes on that country, continuing its brutal aggression against it. U.S. fighter jets conducted at least two airstrikes on the Qalan area east of the city of Sada. No casualties have been reported so far. Areas across Yemen, including Sada, have been repeatedly targeted over the past days. Yemen says the attacks are in support of Israel. The Yemeni army has been carrying out anti-Israel military operations in support of Palestine. Its latest operations targeted military sites in the occupied territories.
The UAV force of the Yemeni armed forces carried out a military operation targeting an Israeli military site in the occupied area of Yafa using a Yafa drone. Also, our air defenses, by the grace of Allah, were able to shoot down the reconnaissance drone known as Giant Shark F-360, operated by the American Israeli enemy while carrying out hostile missions in the airspace of Sada Governorate. The drone was shot down using a locally made surface-to-air missile.
Saadi reaffirmed his country's commitment to supporting the oppressed Palestinian people. He vowed that Yemen would continue its military operations until the Israeli aggression ends and the siege on Gaza is lifted. The Yemeni army spokesman warned that silence and inaction in the face of Israeli atrocities would result in severe consequences. He urged Muslim nations to take swift action to support the Palestinian people and to help bring an end to the genocide of war waged against them.
And with that, brings us to the end of this Worldless edition right here. Thanks so much for staying tuned.
The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran while shortwave, 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day, from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day, from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. Now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
limelight.
Suppression of dissent in the United States of America is not a new phenomenon. Western regimes will increasingly resort to crude tactics of the type implemented by dictatorships they support abroad, blatantly suppressing dissenting voices. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. Crescent International wrote, the arrest of Mahmoud Khalil, a Palestinian graduate of Columbia University who played a prominent role in anti-genocide protests against Israel, has reignited discussions about the so-called freedom of speech in America. This debate is further amplified by Donald Trump's political adversaries, many of whom had supported the invasions of Afghanistan and Iraq, along with draconian measures against Muslims both in the U.S. and abroad. Suppression of dissent in the United States of America is not a new phenomenon. In June 2022, Crescent International had predicted that as the West-centric global order unravels, Western regimes will increasingly resort to crude tactics of the type implemented by dictatorships they support abroad, blatantly suppressing dissenting voices. The primary distinction is that Trump's regime, due to its overt ignorance, lacks the cunning and subtlety of the Obama regime in executing such repression. One particularly telling case that has been largely forgotten by today's self-proclaimed free speech crusaders is that of Tariq Mehna, arrested in October 2009 under dubious circumstances. His case exemplifies the misuse of legal mechanisms to stifle political opposition. An extensive analysis of Mehna's case in the Christian Science Monitor highlighted this stark reality. Quote, a young Muslim male who believed he had the right to express his deep disdain for American foreign policy in the Middle East and Asia. Tariq Mehna, an American-born Bostonian, took his First Amendment rights quite seriously when he vocally condemned his government for killing thousands of Muslims abroad. As a result, he was convicted of conspiring to help Al-Qaeda, unquote. Detractors might argue that Mehna was convicted for being a member of Al-Qaeda. History, however, shows that no regime openly admits to arresting individuals for speaking truth to power. Instead, legal formalities are manipulated to camouflage politically motivated repression. A phrase often attributed to Stalin captures this strategy well. Quote, show me the man and I will show you the crime, unquote. While freedom of thought and speech is indeed more protected in the United States than in regions where Western-backed regimes enforce brutal repression, such as Egypt, Saudi Arabia, or the UAE, this freedom only extends so far as it does not expose the crimes of the ruling elite. The moment dissenting voices begin to influence political outcomes, the cost of a speech becomes evident. As it becomes increasingly clear that Western powers, particularly the U.S., are being relegated to mid-level status in global affairs, their reaction to alternative viewpoints is only set to become more aggressive. The United States, as the principal hegemon of the Western world, has the most to lose from this shift and is therefore likely to lead the charge in brutal crackdowns on dissent. Two major factors will exacerbate political and social turmoil in the U.S. as Washington's tolerance for alternative views continues to erode, Zionism, and the inherent idealism of ordinary Americans. The Zionist lobby now fully understands that a growing number of Americans perceive its influence over U.S. politics as a direct threat to their sovereignty. Recognizing that they are becoming increasingly cornered, Zionist interest groups have chosen to double down on their efforts to suppress critics, an approach clearly evident in the case of Mahmoud Khalil. However, this strategy has led to a paradoxical situation. Regardless of one's view of American society, it remains fundamentally idealistic. This deeply ingrained idealism will inevitably generate a strong backlash against Zionist attempts to weaponize laws against influential political activists and outspoken critics. Ironically, the Zionist greatest adversary may be none other than Donald Trump and his circle of loyalists. Through their crude and heavy-handed critics, they may inadvertently serve as catalysts for mobilizing the American people against Zionist influence in the United States of America. Given Israel's excessive dependence on U.S. backing, a significant shift in American public sentiment poses an existential threat to the Zionist project. The unraveling of the Western order is not a passive process, but an active battleground. No repressive empire is dismantled without cost and sacrifice. Washington's response to America's imperial decline will determine whether the United States can adapt to a multipolar world with some degree of stability or descend into a state of decline, reminiscent of the Soviet Union in late 1980s.
First methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis-sabri was-salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of RIB English Radio, now it's time to listen to a short speech by Sheikh Mahdi Rastani.
Tonight we want to delve into and learn from our first imam what it means to be compassionate, what it means to be kind, and have a master class on the compassion and the mercy of our beloved first imam. Part of the compassion of Ali was that he continuously interacted with the people of his time, continuously tried to guide them, continuously tried to remind them. And this is something that our dear parents can learn from Imam Ali. Amongst the many things that our dear parents have to improve on, this is one of them, that when you tell your children this is what you do, you don't throw a bunch of laws at them and then walk away. And then 15 years later, when they're no longer doing those things, all of a sudden you say, I wonder what happened. When he was 5, he was doing this stuff. When he was 7, he was doing this. When he was 12, he was doing this stuff. Now he's in high school, he doesn't want to do this stuff. Were you a part of his life throughout this time? Were you spending time with him throughout this time? Were you his best friend before he started to have these other friends? So Ali used to walk in the bazaar and he used to interact with people, and these are his constituents essentially, but he spoke to them as a kind father. So the narration says, this man says, I was in Kufa, I was in the masjid, I came out of the masjid. The moment I came out of this masjid, someone behind me looked at me because my clothes were dragging on the ground, and we said this was a sign of heavy wealth back in the day. He says, all of a sudden someone called me from behind. He said, listen, pick up your clothing a little bit. It's better for you that your clothing doesn't drag on the ground like this. I looked behind. I saw a person. He's wearing an abba, something hanging from his shoulders. But I didn't know who this is. Who is this person who's telling me this is better for you, you should do this? So I saw he has a point, of course. But then I asked the other people around, and I said, who is this? They said, huh, it seems like you're not from Kufa. It's pretty clear you're not from around here. Otherwise, you'd know who this is. He said, yes, أنا رجل غريب. I'm not from this part of the country, the land. They said, yes, this is Ali. He walks around in the bazaar. He reminds people of what they need to do. So the man says, I followed Ali to see what he does. I went behind him. He continued. He went to the part of the bazaar where they sell camels. And he turned to them. He said, my dear people, when you sell your camels, sell. Make a profit. وَلَا تَحْلِفُوا. But don't swear left and right. Because when you swear left and right, this takes barakah from your life. Because then people don't care when you actually swear and you actually want to make a point to them. Yes? You've seen these people who left and right, wallahi this, wallahi that. Wallahi bro, wallahi this. Wallahi this, wallahi that. Yes? So he said, sell, wala tahlifu, because it takes your barakah away from you. And he continued on his path. He went to the part of the bazaar where they sell dates. He turned to these people. He said, sell your dates, but keep a little bit for the poor too. This will give you more in profits. This will bring you more sustenance. This is Ali guiding his people. Huh? This is compassion in action from Ali ibn Abi Talib. He continuously used to go back to his people. He gave to the people of the date, he told them this. He was walking away, a kaniz is crying, a servant is crying. He said, why are you crying? She said, I'm crying because I bought some of these dates and I paid a dirham, but the amount I paid is very high. So now I go back to my master and I tell him, these are the dates I bought. He doesn't buy it from me. He doesn't take it from me. He says, you did something with the rest of this money. So Ali walked around and came to the person who had sold her these dates. He said, listen, take back the dates and let her have her dirham back. You sell your dates to someone else. She has a master. Her master won't accept this from her. So this person said, no, I'm not doing this. He insisted. He said, no. So the person narrating the story says, I turned to the seller of the dates. And I said, do you know who this is? He said, no, I don't know who this is. This is a random guy. He said, no, this is Ali. This is the Khalifa. All of a sudden, dropped the dates. Gave him the money. Now you'll pay attention when Ali allows others to introduce him and when Ali doesn't allow others to introduce him. You'll find that he has attention to detail when it comes to this. When he can help others, he's okay with other people introducing him. Then he continued, he went to the place where they used to sell the fish. He turned to the sellers of the fish. He said, listen, sell, but you don't have the right to sell fish that has already died while it was in water. This is not allowed to eat. It's not allowed to consume. He moved on. He went to the place where they sell cloth and clothes. And he turned to the people who sell clothes. He said, I need you to sell me a piece of cloth and a clothing for 3 dirhams. The person who owned the store, he turned to him and said, Ya Amir al-Mu'mineen, I'll do this for you. No problem. Then all of a sudden they saw Ali walked away. Say, Ya Ali, what happened? He said, no. He already knows who I am. I want to pay the 3 dirhams because this is what they are supposed to get for their clothing. And this person knows who I am. He's not going to take the 3 dirhams from me. He will bargain for less with me. See, here he's not okay with people knowing him. Over there, he's very much okay with people knowing him. See the difference? He went on, he went to the next person. He said, can you give me a clothing for 3 dirhams? He said, yes, ya Amir al-Mu'mineen. He walked away. Why, Ya Ali? He said, he knows me. He went, the narration says, he went to a ghulam. A ghulam is a young man, yes? He doesn't know all the politics. He doesn't know who's an official, who's an authority, who's important, who's not important, yes? His father had put him at the store. So he went to him. He said, Ya ghulam, will you sell me a shirt for 3 dirhams? He said, yes, I'll sell a shirt to you for 3 dirhams. No problem. Sold him the shirt. He put on this clothing. He said, Ya Allah, all praise belongs to you. Alhamdulillah. that you gave me a clothes that is a means of adornment for me in public, and it is a means of protecting my body from the threats of nature. And he said, this is a dua the Prophet used to do when he used to wear his clothing. The narration says the cloth was a little long. He cut the extra of the cloth. He moved on. He went to the Masjid of Kufa. He was standing there with some of his other companions. Then all of a sudden, the father of this young man, who's the owner of the store, came running. He had a dirham in his hands. Ali is talking to his companions. He said, what is it? What's going on? He said, Ya Ali, you left this dirham. He said, why? He said, my son didn't know who you were. He was supposed to sell that to you for less than what he sold it to you. And Ali said, listen, no, I'm not taking back the dirham. I sold it and I bought it. And I agreed to it and your son agreed to it. Don't come back here with this dirham. If you didn't know, you'd think he is bargaining for less. And Ali was bargaining for more. He didn't want to use his position so that people would give him the better rates and then for the poor, put more pressure on them. So the first level of compassion that Ali had was that this, he had this constant guidance and education and reminders for his people. He didn't walk in with a book of laws, throw it in front of them and say, do this, and then on the day of judgment, I'll see you. This is not how Ali did things.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio.
The limelight.
Tough talk and threats aside, the Zionist regime finds itself in a more vulnerable position than at any point in its history. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. Palestine Chronicle wrote, "It is clear that Israel is now using the Arabs to mask its own vulnerabilities. And though the monkey continues to climb, his tail has never been as exposed as it is today. The higher the monkey climbs, the more he shows his tail," warns a timeless Chinese proverb. The Zionist regime Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, however, seems to neither heed the lessons of history nor the wisdom of such folk sayings. While leading a vilification campaign against Egypt, the Zionist regime leader is further exposing his regime's vulnerabilities. This is yet another example of Israel's inability to alter the political reality in Gaza, 17 months after it launched its devastating war on the Gaza Strip. By targeting Egypt, the Zionist regime aims to project an image of prowess and that it is unafraid to confront the most populous Arab nation. Yet, in doing so, it inadvertently exposes its own weaknesses. This behavior is wholly consistent with Netanyahu's legacy of running away forward. Long before October 7, 2023, Netanyahu was riding a wave of political euphoria. At the time, his relentless climb to greater heights seemed justified. His Global South diplomacy was reversing decades of Israeli isolation, and his success in gaining international recognition without paying a significant political price earned him immense popularity at home. In Israel, Netanyahu kept winning one election after another. His latest right-wing extremist coalition secured a comfortable majority in the Knesset, facing little pushback. The extremists were poised to transform Israel from within, reconfigure the region, and, with the usual unconditional support from the United States, position the Israeli regime as a global power commanding respect and authority. However, October 7 and the Zionist regime's catastrophic failure on all fronts exposed Netanyahu's tail as a failed leader. The crisis quickly manifested in global outrage as Israel carried out a genocidal war on the Palestinians, killing and wounding over 160,000 people in the course of 15 months. The Zionist regime's tail was further exposed as the once confident leader who tirelessly promised to reshape the West Asia region to fit Israel's agenda, became a wanted criminal by the International Criminal Court on November 21st. While his regime faced investigations for the crime of genocide by the International Court of Justice, yet Netanyahu climbed even higher, doubling down on his approach. He insisted on continuing the war in Gaza, maintaining a military presence in Lebanon, and carrying out frequent and massive bombing campaigns in Syria. Bravado aside, Netanyahu has still failed to achieve any of Israel's stated objectives through the devastating war on Gaza, a war that has also cost Israel unprecedented losses and casualties. Meanwhile, the divisions among the political and military elites are deepening. The latest manifestation of this is the firing of many top military brass and the reordering of the army to align with Netanyahu's political ambitions. The more Israel's vulnerabilities are exposed, the more Netanyahu and his allies intensify their threats, not only against Gaza, Lebanon, and Syria, but also against Egypt. In fact, Egypt, which is not a party to the war and has been one of the three mediators in ceasefire talks, has become the primary target of the Zionist regime's new strategy aimed at ethnically cleansing Gaza's population into the Sinai Desert. But how did this come about? Egypt was hardly a factor in the Israeli regime war on Gaza. Yet, as the war on Gaza dragged on, with no possibility of a total victory, top Israeli regime officials began pointing fingers at Egypt. The idea of taking over the Philadelphia corridor, separating the city of Rafah in southern Gaza from the Egyptian border, was first floated by extremist finance minister Bezalel Smotrich. Others, including Netanyahu himself, soon began parroting the same words. In the media, the language took an even more foreboding turn, with some accusing Egypt of arming the resistance movement Hamas, or of not doing enough to stop the flow of weapons to the Palestinian resistance. When Egypt rejected Israeli regime accusations and refused to accommodate Israel's wish to ethnically cleanse Gaza, Israeli regime leaders began talking of an Egyptian military threat, alleging that Egypt was amassing troops at its border with Israel. The original aim of roping Egypt into Israel's failed war was meant to create a distraction from the battlefield. Eventually, however, the distraction turned into deflection, blaming Egypt for Israel's inability to win the war or to displace the Gaza population. To some extent, Netanyahu has succeeded in making Egypt part of the conversation on Gaza, with U.S. President Donald Trump repeatedly proposing the displacement of Palestinians and the takeover of Gaza. The Zionist regime leader felt that finally he had a clear American commitment to export Israel's problems elsewhere. Even the leader of the Israeli opposition, Yair Lapid, used Egypt to distract from his own failure to mount a serious challenge to Netanyahu's rule. On February 25th, he proposed that Cairo oversee the strip for a number of years at a conference in Washington. While Palestinians, Arabs, and others reacted angrily to the Israel-U.S. ethnic cleansing schemes, few paid attention to the fact that, historically, Israel has never sought permission to ethnically cleanse Palestinians. This was as true during the 1948 Nakba as it is today. Putting pressure on Arab countries to concede to the Zionist regime's ethnic cleansing plans is the strongest sign yet of Israel's weakness. Tough talk and threats aside, the child killer regime of Israel finds itself in a more vulnerable position than at any point in its history. It is clear that the Zionist regime is now using the Arabs to mask its own vulnerabilities. And though the monkey continues to climb, his tail has never been as exposed as it is today.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to EnglishRadio at irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
The following is part of the speech delivered on April 26, 2022 by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in meeting with a number of university students and academic personalities on the 24th day of month of Ramadan. When it is said that the elimination of ideology is necessary in the country, this means that the intellectual identity of society, whose important manifestation is universities and students, has to be destroyed. The elimination of identity means this. It means that the philosophical principles and the historical and national viewpoints of a nation should be humiliated. Their history and that of the revolution should be humiliated. The big feats that have been accomplished should be played down. Of course, there are some shortcomings, but these shortcomings are magnified 10 times. This is what the elimination of identity means. Then, Western philosophy must replace this identity. An example of this attitude is the American 2030 education agenda, which is an embodiment of the domination of Western neocolonialism in our age. This is one of the manifestations of it. Thanks to the revolution, the great legacy of thinking and culture was revived in the country. This has to vanish or be undermined. This is the goal of the enemy. Today, we have tens of millions of youth in the country who are ready to climb the peaks. That is, today, the youth of our country are really ready. some of whom have religious and revolutionary motives, and some may not have religious and revolutionary motives, but they are prepared anyway. They are prepared to launch a scientific movement and climb the summits of glory and national dignity. According to the enemy, these youth must become dysfunctional and disappointed. They must turn their backs on the peaks, and they must stop appreciating the path taken and blow a breath of cold and poisonous air in the trumpet of despair and render other youth hopeless as well. Today, this is being done. Therefore, we must stand up against this. One must stand up against it. When you come here and speak with an exemplary courage and power, we really enjoy this power of eloquence, this enunciation, and this solid rationale. They want to discourage these sentiments with temptations. They intend to inject a sense of dead-end situation in youth so that they feel that nothing can be done because there is an impasse and all efforts are futile. This is what is being done. This is the effort to destroy identity.
From the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio. The Supplication on Sundays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. In the name of Allah, from whom I hope for nothing but bounty, and from whom I fear nothing but justice. I rely only upon His word, and I cling only to His cord. In Thee I seek sanctuary, O possessor of pardon and good pleasure, from wrong and enmity, and from the changes of time, and the recurrence of sorrows, and from the striking of mishaps, and from the expiration